from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I get my kicks on Route 66 with a musical review going on at the Actors Theater of Indiana.
I'll find out about the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra Association's educational programming.
And I get to chat with the popular young adult fiction author John Green. And there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. If you're looking to get your musical review kicks, then take the highway that's the byway. I feel like I should be singing this. To Carmel to see the Actors Theater of Indiana's production of Route 66, featuring more than 30 rock and road songs. Travis DiNicola spoke with the ATI's Don Farrell and Route 66 director and choreographer Mary Jane Waddell about the show.
Mary Jane, Don, welcome to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thanks for having us, Travis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that even though we're recording this right before your big fundraiser, we're airing it afterwards. So I'm just going to say congratulations on a great Moulin Rouge event, because I know it was fantastic, right?
It was amazing.
It was great. Presented by Printing Partners, and you guys just knocked it out, right?
Knocked it out. Indiana Landmark Center. Great. Love it.
Good. Glad to hear that. So so we are jumping into a show or two into your season this year for Actors Theater of Indiana. Route 66, which as soon as I saw you were doing that, I'm just like, I got to get you on, because this is going to be a fun show, it sounds like. I mean, just a mix of great music and tell me about it.
It's a wonderful, wonderful trip across that wonderful landmark, Route 66, and a high-octane musical, kind of a little dash of Grease mixed in with a dash of Forever Plaid. You got four guys, you got a band of three, but a whole bunch of neat, interesting takes on different songs that a lot of people find they remember these songs. Some of them are new novelty songs as well that people haven't heard of before. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
How's this done? Is there sort of a conceit to it, a story? Is it more of a review? Is it people in a car going across the country? I mean, tell me, how's it all play together?
They call it a review, but really it's a journey of four guys from Chicago to L.A. across the historic Route 66. And even when you tell people, even when you say Route 66, it brings up so much nostalgia for a lot of people saying, oh, well, I traveled there. And from the 20s, until the 80s when it was decommissioned, everybody's got a story, whatever state. And even today, there's areas in each state that are trying to keep Route 66, the old Route 66, alive and preserve it and bring back those great wacky landmarks like the Abe Lincoln Hotel and the Dixie Truck Stop and the Cadillac Ranch and all those great stops along the way. So the show is basically from Chicago to L.A. There's not really a
Don't forget Winona.
That's right. Don't forget
That's
Winona.
It.
Exactly. But there's no, as you would say, book to it.
Okay.
But the songs and the way we're directing it is trying to keep a cohesive storyline from their journey from Chicago.
So kind of using the geography, if you will.
Exactly.
I mean, as you're traveling across the country and through Illinois and then Missouri and all and can you keep going? I did that trip once in 94. So, the route wasn't all exactly there, but it was really interesting at the time because a good friend was moved across country and we decided, I was like, help him move. And we took as much of it as possible, which from, state to state and in between city and city, some was still there, some wasn't. It's sometimes you're kind of driving parallel on a highway. Other times you got off in some really strange places and a couple dead ends, but there's a lot of great tourist stuff all along the way, and there's so much pride along the way too. I mean, from every single state. I mean, especially I think in Oklahoma, it seemed like, I mean, people there just love and celebrate Route 66 whenever they can. It's a big part of, still sort of who they are.
And it's a really big part of America's history, because it really was the first major thoroughfare, that you didn't have to get stuck in the mud.
Right.
To gosh. So, and even when Clinton was in office, he gave a huge amount of money to help restore Route 66. And now you can take, there's actual routes that you can take, and it'll show you where to go onto the old and then come back. Well, it's not Route 66 anymore. It's just like I-40 and all of that.
Yeah.
So, but it is, yeah, I want to take the trip now that I'm directing the show. It seems so cool because of all the research that I've done. And it is. It's just your pride. It's the pride of each state and that historic byway.
And we're really excited about opening night on the 26th of October because we're going to have all these great 1960s muscle cars parked
out
on the front of the Palladium, right by the Studio Theater where we present at the Studio Theater. Everybody thinks about the Palladium because everybody, you know, when you think of the
Center. Sure, but there's that other great building there where you've got
the James
Tarkenton
building.
And the studio, and there's that lovely sort of lawn area in between and stuff. And I know, you know, some people, they'll go maybe to an event at the Palladium and they'll park in the above ground parking garage and walk through this building as they're going, and they're like, what is this? That's where the studio is.
Exactly.
And it's a great building in and of itself.
And it's perfect. We really have the best of all worlds because no matter what the inclement weather might be, whether it's beautiful out or not, they park in the garage, they take
the
elevator
right
down,
in.
They go walk right into the theater. It's
nice.
Perfect.
So where are you getting these cars from? Are you working with some car clubs?
Yeah, we
friends?
Have some car clubs, some Corvette,
Corvette
clubs, and
yeah.
the Corvette clubs are coming in. They're going to be driving in,
well,
showing
sure,
off all
right.
their
I mean, the
fancy
old
cars.
TV show, right? Route 66, it was a Corvette, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
at the end of the show, they get to the coast, and it's really about the muscle cars. And so a lot of it is about Route 66, but it's also about how cars were so, 50s and 60s, how the booming automobile industry.
The
so
car culture.
In the show, there's a lot of commercial ads, actual old commercial ads for cars and car parts, and so it'll be really, really great for the baby boomers. They'll remember a lot of these commercials.
Yeah, we're using our season really to help celebrate Americana. You know, we had Gypsy as one of the landmark musicals of the
right.
American
that's
Musical
what you guys
Theater.
Opened
we
with.
We just opened with that and finished that production, and then we're going on Route 66, which of course is nothing but Americana. You think about the cars and, you know, built in America and Route 66. It's just so iconic. And to be able to celebrate that. And then, of course, we do. We have Musical of Musicals, the musical, which parodies all of that's going to be in February.
Cool.
And that parodies all the great musical theater genre. And then, of course, we close up with a British story of My Fair Lady, but you can't get any more American than the musical theater art form. And when you think of musical theater, you think of My Fair Lady. So,
Don, tell me, who else is in this cast on Route 66?
Craig Underwood, who's a wonderful, wonderful actor. He's hysterical, has an amazing voice. Nick Carpenter, also an amazing actor, very talented,
and
versatile.
Local musician.
Plays guitar and harmonica. He's
and we'll
all sorts
we'll use
of talents.
These talents on stage as well. So the actors will also be musicians as
well. Yeah, and then we brought in Will Hutchison from New York City. So he's been brought in, and of course Mary Jane Waddell, who's joined us, and she's also from New York, and she's done you name it. She's pretty much done it. So we're bringing in two outsiders from the New York City scene.
Now, Mary Jane, is this your first time here working?
I actually did last season the Andrews Brothers.
Oh,
here.
Okay.
So
okay.
I was lucky enough to perform on the stage, and now I'm changing hats into director choreographer.
Nice.
And
and that was also another Roger Bean piece too.
Okay.
Route 66 was
So in that style, similar to the Andrews Brothers, right?
Okay. Yeah, somewhat. Yeah.
Cool.
And don't forget to mention that you also, Don Farrell, are in the show.
I was assuming. What's the favorite song that you get to sing? What are you really enjoying right now?
Yeah, you know, my gosh, there's so many of them. I mean, look, they got Oklahoma Hills, On the Road Again, Route 66, of course. There's the Texaco Star theme. There's Used to Be. That's a great song. Used to Be. It's a really nice song.
I don't know if I know that one.
Yeah. That's by Thomas Skinner and Robert Wiles.
The Long Red Line is one of my favorites.
That's
too.
Really cool.
And
that's a good song.
One that I had not heard before.
Yeah.
So,
and of course, you got all those great Beach Boys songs, I Get Around.
Sure.
And Fun, Fun, Fun. You got GTO.
Little Old Lady
from Pasadena. Bring My Cadillac Back. Dead Man's Curve. There's tons of them. I mean, how many are there in this? What,
30-something?
33 songs. Yeah. So it's just a toe-tapping, high-octane fun night.
High-octane is right. Well, this sounds great. So, well, let me ask you this. How are things going at Actors Theatre of Indiana? Because I know, I mean, like many other arts organizations right now, you know, there's certainly been some financial struggles. There was some stuff in the paper. But it sounds like you guys, you're on your feet. You're here. You're doing shows. You're not just on your feet. You're tap dancing.
Absolutely. That's right. That's what we do. We tap dance right through. You know, like you said, we're not the only arts organization that's experiencing troubles, not only here locally, but really nationwide as well. And it's a tough time for the arts in general. So, you know, we feel the pains of all of our other brothers and sisters arts organizations here locally. And for us, you know, we experienced a kind of tight cash flow crunch of a short period of time.
Right.
And we asked for an appeal to our patrons, and they responded overwhelmingly.
Through.
It was wonderful. You know, our annual campaign for funds is still going strong. We've raised over $18,000, and we're still accepting those donations. And when we put that appeal out for our patrons, you know, it was amazing. It was very humbling, too, because we had people coming up to our door with checks and cash at times, saying, you know, we need to keep Actors
right.
Theater of Indiana around. And I know that's shared for us, but it's also shared for all arts organizations. We need the arts more now than ever.
Well, that's got to mean a lot that, you know, people who have been coming to your shows who are regulars, whether, you know, season ticket buyers or, you know, they see a show now and then, but, you know, some probably who, you know, have been donors, some first time, but they love your product and they came out to support you when you needed it most.
Right.
And that's
got to
mean a lot to
us. It
you
means a huge, huge deal to us. And, you know, it shows that what we've got is something that people believe in, and we keep on, you know, keeping the faith and keep smiling and tip-tap-toeing away.
That's right. That's right. Now, the next thing is to get even more people to every single one of those shows, right?
And that's right.
And convert them as well.
That's right. You know, we have like an 80% return rate when people come to see an ATI show, which is a great thing. And it's just been hard. You know, when we started out in 2005, we were in Zionsville, but then we popped around to different places around central Indiana.
Sure.
And each time we went there, we were always building up a base. So it was kind of like starting
Pike
up again.
Pike Center for a while. And
Pike Center
places,
for the Performing Arts. And then we were at the Zionsville Performing Arts Center. Mm-hmm. We were down at the Athenaeum at once. We were at the Indiana History before, and then we were up in Carmel and Clay Terrace, and then now we're at the Center for the Performing Arts. So each time we did that, we had our patrons that were growing, but then, you know, we kind of had to reinvest and build up that base again, which, of course, takes a lot of time.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we have an amazing family in the ATI group, so we thrilled, and it grows every day.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that. And it sounds like just a really, really fun show, Route 66. You know, I mean, Mary Jane, you're just smiling when you were talking about the show. You're obviously having a great time directing it yourself. I mean, this guy I know is having a good time performing in it. But...
I'm not sure. It's just the first week of rehearsal. I'm not sure they're still enamored with me at this point because I've given them a lot of hard work. But really, I can guarantee if you come and see the show, you're going to just have a great time and see so much talent and just feel the nostalgia and the pride of Route 66. It really, after all the research, honest to God, I'm having a great time with it. So, and I know everyone else will.
Yeah, with everything that's going on in the world today, you kind of have to leave your troubles behind and take that road down Route 66,
road trip
with us,
everybody. Yep.
And leave your cares behind.
Everyone needs a little adventure, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Travis DiNicola with the Actors Theater of Indiana's Don Farrell and the director and choreographer of Route 66, Mary Jane Waddell. The musical review created by Roger Bean opens October 26th and runs through November 18th. And you can get more information at actorstheaterofindiana.org. That's theater with an R-E at the end, actorstheaterofindiana.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
For three quarters of a century, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra Association has been out in the community providing support and education on behalf of the ISO. Sharon Gamble invited the ISOA's president-elect, Connie Menke, and VP of Orchestra Support, Betty Sisko, to tell us more about this vital organization, including the thousands of community members who benefit from their work.
So before we get into what the ISOA does, I want to hear how you first got involved or how you first learned about the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. Let's start with Connie.
Well, I got involved in 1989 when we were transferred back to Indianapolis. And at that time, the South Group of the association was doing a Christmas home tour.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine asked me to get involved and to put my home on the tour and just have been active and kind of gotten more active ever since.
Fantastic. And Betty, how about you? How'd you get? connected?
I was been a member since I retired. I was looking for a very positive organization to be involved with and had heard good things, and I have a bit of a music background, and so it seemed natural for me to be looking at the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, and started out just doing some membership activities, and it's taken off from there.
Now, you know you're not going to get away with just kind of skipping by that, have sort of a musical background. You know I'm going to ask you to explain that.
Well, I took piano for 12 years as a child, and my father was a church choir director, so between that and college, or high school and college, music, I have developed that appreciation.
Nobody studies piano for 12 years as a child who isn't pretty serious about it. Connie, did you ever take the plunge and study instruments or voice?
No, I really have no background or training in music, but...
But you're a listener.
I'm a listener.
That's the most important role.
Really, we got hooked very quickly when a friend of ours took us to the first concert here. And we met Raymond Lepard at that time. And, of course, he's charming. And from there, we just started attending concerts and have really, really enjoyed the experience.
Well, the ISO is always highest profile for the concerts on stage, but there is this whole other universe that's going on that you guys are a part of that I want you to give us a little peek into. First of all, thank you so much. As you're sitting here in our recording studio, you're both sort of anxious because you have a fundraising event coming up in a couple of days that will be over by the time our listeners hear this, but thank you for making the time. You have a couple of big sort of tentpole fundraising events, another one coming in the spring. But I want to know what it is you and your nearly 700 compatriots in the association are raising the money for. Talk about the outreach.
I think one of the things that we really want to stress is our support for the learning ISOA learning community. Their educational programs are just excellent, and we are pleased to be able to be a part of that. We are involved with three particularly. One of those is the Symphony in Color, and this is open to all children in elementary school throughout the state. They actually listen to music recorded by our symphony. There is a script that the teachers can follow. The curriculum meets the standards of the state education. And they listen to the music, and then they draw, or they paint, or they color. And those are then sent in, and our organization is entirely responsible for everything from unboxing every submission to choosing the judges and actually making the awards to the children for their contributions. It's a wonderful program. It's been a part of the ISOA for over 30 years, and so it's one of our premier projects that we support as part of the learning community.
And you know what intrigues me about that is this has been going on for decades, and sometimes we think that, it's sometimes called 360-degree arts education, where you pair different art forms together. We think of that as a new thing,
right.
But this has been going on for years and years and years. Give us some statistics, because I know you have thousands of kids participate in this statewide. Do you remember how many last year participated? Ballpark?
I can't remember.
Opened a lot of boxes.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is they come from throughout the state.
Yeah.
This is not just central Indiana. And we have are so pleased that I think this last year's winner was a first grader. And one of the parts of that I enjoy so much is that the winners are actually, they're framed and they're put on the mezzanine of the Hilbert Circle Theater, and then they're transferred in the spring after the award ceremony to the Indiana Museum of Art, And, well, I should
Indiana
group
State
that
Museum?
Up. Indiana
State Museum.
State Museum.
There we go.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Indiana State Museum. And so it's open to the public. And the children, of course, and their parents are thrilled.
They're having their first touring gallery show.
That's right. That's right. So it really is. It's a very positive program. And we get so much help from the ISO staff, of course, with this, and as well as the musicians. So it's well done.
Sure. You know, anybody who's downtown in the spring is accustomed to, oh my gosh, why are all those school buses here? So let's talk about why are all those school buses there?
Well, those are there for the Young People's Discovery Concerts. And every year we invite children throughout Indiana to, it's often fifth grade students, we invite them to come and to hear a concert at the Symphony Hall. For many of them, probably most of them, it's their first experience with the symphony. And the program is designed especially for children. And it's really great to see them get off their bus. And oftentimes the boys are wearing suits.
Aww.
And the little girls have party dresses on, just as if they were adults coming to the symphony. So I think this is a great experience. And children really need to be introduced to music and the symphony at an early age and help make that grow as they grow with their life, and if they're involved in music and things like that, that they know what it's all about and where they can go with it.
It's good to remember that it's so important to have kids get in the door of a concert hall in the early years, because if they get all the way through school, through high school and college, and still haven't been to a concert, then it becomes daunting. It becomes kind of a psychological obstacle. Oh, I'm not sure when to clap, what to do, what to wear, how to behave. Mm-hmm. But even if they have that experience once or twice as children, then they're over that obstacle. There's a comfort level.
I think the learning community does a great job of sending out materials to the schools that are going to be sending their students, and they do put things into their guidelines as far as, you know, how to behave and when to clap, mm-hmm. and all those things. And we're always amazed, those of us who volunteer as greeters or ushers, how well schooled, I guess you'd say, they are. The teachers do a great job of preparing them for this experience. But it's still great to see their eyes light up when they walk into the hall.
Aww. You have some opportunities that you work with that are a little bit more hands-on, and one that has been kind of a rising star for a number of years is the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra. How do kids get involved in that? How are they recruited?
Well, I think, first of all, the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra is a relatively new project with the ISO, and so they are to be commended for just how they have helped get this off the ground. One of the things that has impressed our membership is how many families from the central Indianapolis area want to be involved. We have now been told that there is a waiting list. There are over 200 families participating in the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra program. There are actually four groups, you know, A, B, C, D, beginning, and they are beginning now with teaching these children, believe it or not, as young as kindergarten age, and they have the smaller stringed instruments, of course, and then the parents are involved as well, and some of the parents take lessons as well with their sons or daughters. So that's one of the reasons it's such a success, is because it is a family program, and one of the things that the families agree to is that their son, daughter will graduate from high school. So it is a lifelong learning experience for these children. And we are just now, as an organization, beginning to help with this. In fact, they're going to have an appreciation day for us, for our members, where we can come in and sit down with them, and they're going to show us how to play their instrument, what they've
cool.
learned. So we appreciate the fact that they are opening their doors to us. They want to get to know us just as we want to get to know them.
Absolutely.
So this is, again, one of our, as Connie has been trying to develop, one of our projects that we really think is important that our members know more about.
Now, I have two lovely ladies, as you can tell from the voices that you're hearing on the radio, but there are opportunities for women and men, young, old, and in between in the association, right?
Exactly. That was not true some years ago, but we have changed our policy, and now we are just open to men and women and really interested. We want people who have a passion for music. And there are just all ways to participate, and many men participate in all these programs as well as women.
So if you grew up reading about the Symphony Women's Committee, it's not just that anymore.
No.
What do you like most about being involved in this organization, Connie?
Well, there are two things, really. Probably the first thing is that I see there are so many benefits for children that wouldn't happen if we as an organization weren't involved in trying to create awareness of these programs and bring the financial support and the volunteer support. Secondly, and I think most of our members feel this way, they enjoy the friendships they make through the organization. We have just a wonderful group of people, and all having a similar purpose and reason for volunteering, it makes it a great fun experience.
Mm-hmm. Betty's nodding as she hears this.
Yes, and I think one of the benefits that we have is by being members, we have a chance to get to know the orchestra members. We have what we call our musical morning and musical evening programs. Each of our city groups has at least one of these programs each year, and an orchestra member or staff member comes and performs for us, tells us about their own personal background, their training, and we get to ask questions, and it's just always a delightful program, and it's one that, by being a member, for the most part, it is either there's no cost involved or it's a very nominal cost. So each of our four city groups, as well as our two state groups, experience the musical morning or the musical evening, and just part of our membership that we like to tell people about.
Well, stay tuned. We're going to tell you fond listeners how to get in touch with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra Association.
Sharon Gamble with Connie Menke and Betty Sisko of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra Association. The ISOA is a 75-year-old volunteer organization whose mission is to promote music education for children and adults and to create fundraising projects to help support the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. You can learn more if you go to the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra's website at indianapolissymphony.org, and then you go to support, get involved, and then the ISO Association. You can look for that, or you could just send an email to isoa@indianapolissymphony.org. Again, isoa@indianapolissymphony.org, or you know what? Just give them a call, 317-262-4068.
Mom, I'm bored. I'm tired of fall break. Dad, what can we do? This is so dull.
Sharon, it creeps me out when you call me Dad. What's going on?
No, this is just some of
it's
what I...
It's worse when you call me Mom.
Sorry, Pam.
Were you talking
this
to me?
I'm repeating some of what I've heard in my neighborhood from kids who are on fall break. And, gee, they're bored to tears. So I bet we have some ideas for
there
things they can do on our calendar we call.
What'll we do?
And these are Mom and Dad approved activities,
this
mostly.
This is perfect, then. This is very kid-friendly and great for Mom and Dad, too.
Indeed.
Chocolate Fest 2012.
Yum.
It's the Arts for Learning event. Arts for Learning, which used to be called Young Audiences, is having this event on Saturday, October 20th from noon until 4. tour. It's taking place at the Harrison Center for the Arts. That's up at 15th and Delaware. And it's a totally different format this year where you buy a ticket and then you get to go in and sample chocolate from something like 20 different chocolate makers. And for mom and dad, there's also Sun King beer there and wine from Chef Joseph's. There's entertainment throughout the day. Lots of fun stuff. You can also buy chocolate from all the vendors, so a great place to stock up for your holiday purchases. So it should be a lot of fun. Again, this Saturday, so if you're listening Saturday morning, there's still time. October 20th from noon until 4 at the Harrison Center for the Arts.
And if you buy too much, remember, Travis and I love chocolate.
That's right.
As does...
How could you buy too much? But yes.
No, I think it's impossible. Hey, another family-friendly event this Saturday night at 7 at UUI, which is at 615 West 43rd Street. It's the second concert of the season for Indie Folk Series. Two artists, MJ Bishop and W.T. Davidson. Influenced, in the case of Mr. Bishop, by what's referred to as a yearning Americana sound, influenced by Hank Williams and Patty Griffin. W.T. has kind of a quirky jazz blues-influenced style with an engaging sparkle. So what a nice combination. Something for everybody. And again, this is family-friendly. 7 to 9 at UUI on 615 West 43rd Street, second concert of the Indie Folk Series season.
And great. Another event going on Saturday the 20th. This one's from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. out at the Service Center. That's on Lafayette Road. That's Big Cars, Big Community Center. It is their family fun day with music and a bounce house and animals and clowns and food
chickens.
Trucks. And you can meet chickens and natural hair care. And there's story time and art and face painting and a pizza oven. It's just nonstop. And in the evening, there's the movies Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, an old silent version of it with some fun jazz, pop, and Euro folk music from Tonus Triad being played with it, as well as a screening of Dracula with Philip Glass music. All sorts of fun, crazy fun, in fact, out at the Service Center. Then that's going on today, but Sharon, it gets even better. You know, those crazy kids at the Service Center, they just
yes.
can't stop, because next weekend they're having a zombie celebration.
Yeah, I dare you to read this with a straight face.
Okay,
I got the same information.
Okay, battling zombies with creativity at the Service Center. Second Story, which is a great organization, works with mainly junior high school kids doing reading, writing activities. Second uh-huh. Story is celebrating the spooky season with writing events, and studies show that without creativity, kids are more likely to turn into zombies. But never fear, Second Story, the Indianapolis-based youth creative writing project, is working hard to fight off the youth zombie apocalypse with some spooky events and activities at the Service Center for Culture and Community next weekend on the 26th and 27th. That's right. So, Rite of the Living Dead. That's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're also going to have, you're right. I can't do it without laughing.
That's because zombies are eating your brain.
Horror writing workshops, a big family zombie tag party. What more do you want?
I'll think of the zombie families I know, too.
You know, if you haven't been out to the Service Center, either next weekend or this weekend is a great time to do so.
Go to both.
It's so
I don't
much
think
fun.
You can miss.
Take the whole family and have a great time. Can't go wrong.
Just beware. Make sure you keep track of your brain or the zombies will eat it. Okay, also family friendly, it's Victorian Theater by Candlelight at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site. The play is called Haunted DC, and it's a progressive play. And if you go, you'll meet many spectacular specters and get a peek into some of the issues they've encountered in the afterlife. But because...
Like dealing with zombies?
It's an educational site. I don't think there are zombies, but I okay. haven't been yet, so I wouldn't... I don't know for sure, but George Washington deals with his mother issues. Six presidents grapple with the same Indian curse, and several of the former first ladies, led by Abigail Adams, behave like they are on the astral equivalent of The View.
Wow.
I could not make this up. I don't think there are zombies, but
this is what
I think
you get for eating brains, Sharon.
I know. I think you'd better check it out. And it runs just through this weekend, so this is your last chance. Information at 317-631-1888, 317-631-1888.
Hey, have you heard about the Oxalog? It's an opera that is being, there's a world premiere of this coming up on October 29th at many, many sites around the world. It's an interactive opera. Oxalog is the Inuit word for melting snow, and this is an opera about the environment and the changing Arctic regions in Alaska and Canada. And there's actually going to be, it's a performance taking place at 5 p.m. on October 29th at the IUPUI Campus Center Theater, and it's part of this whole like world premiere of this opera. It sounds pretty cool. Actually, if you type in, let me spell it for you, AUKSALAQ, again, AUKSALAQ, you'll find lots of information about Oxalog.
I love that sort of thing with the contemporaneous world premieres. That's just such a cool idea.
That's pretty cool stuff. What one more thing we've got
one
time
more
for.
Thing.
What do you got
there? Family-friendly films are easy to find as part of the Heartland Film Festival, which had its grand opening night this week. If you're listening to the radio on Thursday night, you're not at the grand opening. If you're listening on Saturday morning, you might have been there, and you can tell us your stories. But you can find out much more at heartlandfilmfestival.org. Life-affirming films, most of them appropriate for your whole family. So that's there's right. No reason for those kids to be bored, even if fall break has gone on too long.
Especially
like if zombies are in their world.
Exactly.
Yeah, if zombies are in their world, they're not bored at all.
Art. Must eat more art.
Must eat more art.
Okay, we'll be back next week, maybe with a zombie free. No, it's right before Halloween.
No, it's right before Halloween.
We'll have even more zombies next week.
We'll have
week
more
on
zombies.
Calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Author John Green has had a terrific year. His book, The Fault in Our Stars, has been on the New York Times bestseller list, is on about every critic's top 10 list for young adult fiction, and he just received the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award. Travis DiNicola spoke with John Green about his work.
So I got to say, I am really thrilled this year that the Indiana Authors Award selected you as the national winner, Barb Shoup as the regional, and Dan Wakefield as the Lifetime Achievement Award winner. Now with having you on Art of the Matter in the past month, we've had all three of you on. Dan has been on as well as Barb. And also I think what's really cool is at Indie Reads Books, which is what I'm doing when I'm not on Art of the Matter, we've had all three of you for readings at the bookstore this year. And I think it's great, and it's been really cool to help celebrate the Indiana Authors Awards with the three of you this year. I want to start out by just asking you what it means to you to be honored in this way. We're recording it right before the award ceremony happens and airing it afterwards, and so congratulations. But what's this mean to you to be honored in this way?
Oh, it means a lot. I mean, it means a lot coming from my hometown. This place has really become home to my family and me, and so it's a tremendous honor. It's also an honor to be acknowledged alongside writers I really admire, like Barb and Dan. So it's really a thrill.
Cool. Well, I know a lot of people were very excited when you moved back, and this is a great recognition of that. You have become your own brand, and a really both complex and interesting one, I find, as an author. I mean, when we had you for the opening of Indie Reads Books, there were 400 very well-behaved teenage girls there with their books in hand, which was kind of a really exciting thing to see. I mean, that many young people with physical books wanting to, celebrate literacy with you. And that's, I mean, you've got such a great appeal with young kids, but it goes beyond the books. It's, I mean, what you're doing online with your blogs, numerous websites. Do you feel a little, multi-personality with all your different brands?
Well, I mean,
schizophrenic,
I see it all as part of the same, same endeavor in a lot of ways, because, I'm trying to talk about stuff that I find interesting with people I find interesting. And a lot of times that takes the form of novels, which for me is the place where I can have sort of in-depth conversations, both as a reader and a writer. That's a place where I can go to have quiet, contemplative time, kind of alone, or at least alone with one other person, the author. Mm-hmm. But it's also really important to me to reach out to the places where people are, not just to the places where maybe I wish they would be, but the places where they are, and they are on Twitter, and they are on Tumblr, and they are on Facebook. And so that's important to me. And I think because I grew up with the internet, it's just always been a part of my life, and I don't see it as separate from my writing work, really. I see it as part of it.
Tell me about Nerdfighters, because that's a big part of your online work that you're doing, and online personality.
Yeah, the community of people who watch the videos that my brother and I make are called Nerdfighters, because they fight for nerd culture and intellectualism and just generally celebrate nerdiness. And yeah, it's been a huge part of my life, and I have so much admiration for these young people who are excited and enthusiastic. Because really, I mean, when we criticize people for being nerds, what we're actually saying is you are getting too excited about something. You are geeking out, as we say. Well, you know, I think it's great to geek out. I think it's great to be excited. I love to see passion. I mean, we're only, at least so far as we know, we're only here just the once. Like, are we going to spend that time reveling in ironic detachment, or are we going to spend that time marveling at the miracle of human consciousness? And Nerdfighters remind me every day that that it's a real privilege to be here, a real privilege to be able to observe the universe, and it is something that we should get excited about.
And passionate about, and enthusiastic about. And it doesn't have anything, even though, I mean, a lot of your reach is, you know, through your books and through the work you do online with young adults, it's not limited to that at all.
No. In fact, like, most of the people who watch our videos are over 18.
Yeah.
And frankly, these days, most of the people who read my books are over 18, too. I mean, The Fault in Our Stars is read primarily by adults. But yeah, I mean, to me, it's you know, in all of my work, I want to reach the broadest possible audience.
You mentioned your brother. You two do a lot of video work together. You kind of were famous for the video communication that you had with each other over a couple years a year back. Tell me a bit about that, working with your brother on things like this.
Well, we started making videos back and forth to each other in 2007, when YouTube was still kind of a new thing. And we thought that we were only going to do it for a year. But our audience grew very large, and we felt a responsibility to the audience, I guess. And so we kept making videos. In fact, we just made
And you were making videos in lieu of sending each other emails?
Right, yeah. We'd given up all textual communication, and
which
we're communicating.
Which is a weird thing for an author to do.
Well, it is, but I also feel like text, particularly between friends or family members, can be a way of sort of insulating yourself from intimacy. And so I wanted to be seeing my brother and talking to him, because he lives in Montana and we don't see each other very often. So I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to have that feeling of close interaction again that I hadn't had since we were little kids. But yeah, I mean, obviously I do like text. I'm a fan of it, but so we did that for a year, and then, and then that just sort of kept going, and we just made our 1,000th video, and I mean, we just passed 250 million video views. So it's been 6 crazy years.
I was just watching a video that recently posted. The title, I think it's roughly, Why Corporations Don't Have to Suck. Is that close?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Tell me a bit about this one.
Well, a few years ago, my brother started a record label for YouTube musicians to sort of restructure the deals that musicians traditionally get, so that they would basically, his company basically does the distribution, the artists themselves, who are already doing all their own promotion and marketing, get the vast majority of the sales from each album. And this has worked really well, but then they've also expanded into many other kinds of businesses. And the argument that I wanted to make in the video is that when you make a business that's focused on filling a need, and making a reasonable profit, that the economy isn't a zero-sum game, that, like, you know, we can grow the entire size of the economy, and that's ultimately how jobs are created and things like that. So the idea, and we all have this idea that, like, while we like the things that corporations make, we find the corporations themselves a little bit icky. And there are some good reasons.
Reference iPods and Dr. Pepper.
Right. We like iPods and Dr. Pepper, but we don't necessarily like Apple or PepsiCo or I actually don't know who makes Dr. Pepper. It might be independent. But we don't, you know, I wanted to, you know, to argue that within this industrialization post-industrialization capitalism, there is, there is within that some kinds of businesses to actually celebrate.
Do you ever, I mean, it's got to be an interesting balance that, and I don't know how intentional you are in maintaining it, in terms of both the fact that you're speaking out on things like this is exciting to your fans, but there's also always that risk of alienating some of your fans. I mean, I saw one time, I don't even remember what it was, but a couple of weeks ago you had posted something on Facebook that was somewhat political, and people were like, oh, John Green's being political. You know, I mean, it's...
Yeah. Wasn't that political? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty. I can't not be myself.
Yeah.
And I don't really feel an obligation to be someone other than myself. And I also think that because I do espouse a kind of political centrism that's a bit out of fashion at the moment of our celebration of ideological rigidity. I do feel a bit of a responsibility to stand up as one of those voices of just, hey, let's meet in the middle. You know, the old fashioned American idea of compromise. So I guess I do feel a responsibility to do that, but I also, on Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr, I am myself, and it doesn't really do me any good not to be myself.
Right. But in terms of that responsibility, I mean, does it cross your mind that, you know, as you said, I mean, you've got more perhaps readers now that are over 18, but so much of your fan base is, you know, teenage girls and boys, 14, 15, 16 years old, who are following you, who are reading this stuff, and, you know, some people could say, oh, is he influencing them in a positive manner? I mean, what sort of, I mean, responsibility do you feel towards that?
Well, I think, it's a real privilege to have a seat at the table in the lives of young people when they're forming their values and when they're deciding what matters most to them, what's important to them, when they're grappling with these big, interesting philosophical questions of human existence for the first time. That's a real privilege, and it's one that I try to take very seriously, both in my novels and in my online work. At the same time, I try always to encourage people to disagree with me, mm-hmm. and not to assume that I'm right. And in fact, you know, I try to always say that I might be wrong and that I've been wrong before. And then in fact, I'm often wrong, and that, like, it's okay to change your mind, and that it, you know, that value formation process is not a monolithic event. It's a process that goes on for your entire life, and it's okay to change and grow and
explore and
yeah
and
absolutely.
Maybe make some mistakes along the way.
Absolutely,
almost certainly. Let's talk a bit about your work. I mean, your newest book, The Fault in Our Stars, has been a New York Times bestseller, has had amazing reviews. Congratulations.
Thanks.
On that. The book is set here in Indianapolis. Tell me a bit about it.
Yeah, it's about two kids, Hazel and Augustus, who meet at a support group for teenagers with cancer. And Hazel has stage 4 thyroid cancer and has been sick and terminally sick for quite a while. Augustus is in remission from a bone cancer. And they meet and they kind of share a love for a book that was written by an author who now lives in seclusion in Amsterdam. And they really want to meet this author and ask him what happens after the end of his book, which has a very sort of ambiguous, annoyingly ambiguous ending. And so it's really the story of their sort of emergent love together, and also their love of this book. But it is, yeah, it's set here in Indianapolis. So, like, from the Indianapolis Museum of Art to the Speedway at 86th and Ditch, there are lots of familiar places.
So you've been back in Indy now for, what, about 4 years or so?
5 years.
Five years. And what is it like being, you know, an author living here? I mean, I know you certainly travel for your work quite a bit, but this is home.
This is home, and I love this city, and I think it's a great city for an American writer to live in because it's such an American city, in both the best ways and the most challenging ways. You know, I think that the people here are uncommonly generous and hardworking, and I believe that ultimately a place is its people, and that's why I love Indianapolis, is because I love my friends here, and, you know, we've grown to have such great relationships with our friends and neighbors here, mm-hmm. and I can't imagine ever living anywhere else. But you know, it's also, but it also embodies America in the sense of chain restaurants. I mean, this is where, if you want to start a new chain restaurant, this is your test market, because it's so American. It's so, and I think so when I, if I'm going to be writing about America, it feels very right to me to be living here in a place that resembles in so many important ways, and that symbolizes in so many important ways both what I love and what I struggle with about contemporary America. So it's the perfect place for me, but I also just really like living here. I love biking around the city. I love driving my car. I'm an American in that sense. So, you know, it's great. I really love it here.
So can you share with us a bit about what you're working on now?
I'm not working on much at the moment. This book has sort of taken over my life, which is great. That's obviously a wonderful thing to have happen to you, but it makes it difficult to write. But I'm just starting to research a new book, parts of which are set here. So we'll see.
So, John, let me ask you one last question. For your fans out there that are listening right now, what book would you recommend to them to read while they're waiting for your next one?
Well, they're going to have to read a bunch. I just read a wonderful young adult novel that also is a great read for adults called Every Day by David Levithan, which is about a person with no gender or body who wakes up each day in the body of a different person and spends one day inside that person's body, sort of possessing them, essentially. It's a really, really interesting novel. It's that rare novel that has a great premise that also pulls off the premise really interestingly. So, yeah, I'd recommend Every Day.
Very cool. John Green, it's great to have you on Art of the Matter. And again, congratulations for being the national winner of the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award this year. It's a great honor, and it's well-deserved.
Oh, thanks very much, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with author John Green. You can learn more at johngreenbooks.com, johngreenbooks.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week at our new time, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I find out what's going on with VSAI this season.
I'll learn about the Indiana Historical Society's fall events.
And I get the inside scoop on a WFYI documentary about a lost Shakespearean play. Plus, we'll have that calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.